Welcome to All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Claire Roth. I'm in for Ann Fisher. We are talking about wine today, how it can elevate the dining experience and the food itself. Joining us are my co-hosts, WOSU food critics and cooking teachers, Steve Stover. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning.
And Rich Tarapac Sr. Welcome back.
Great to be here, Claire.
You can find their writing and more than 150 restaurant reviews online at WOSU.org/chefsinthecity. And you can join the conversation today by giving us a call, 614-292-8513, or by emailing us at allsides@wosu.org. Also joining us, Kamal Boulos. Kamal has been with the Refectory for more than 40 years. He bought the restaurant in 81. He added a wine cellar 10 years later. And now he has opened up a wine shop in store. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Good morning. My pleasure.
So before we talk about the new shop, give us just a little bit of background of your and the Refectory's history with wine.
Well, my wine interest actually sparked when I was working at a place in upstate New York, and I was a maitre d' there, and I had some wine in my room, and we didn't have that much of a wine list at the dining room. I was not the architect of that, so I'd often bring wine out of my room to give to the guests that were looking for something a little extra. And from there, I came to Ohio in 1976. And when I took over as general manager in 1977, it was my dream to build a wine cellar. But that didn't really come to fruition until 1981. And that's when we were in a position and had the resources to just begin. We started with 12 bottles in a metal locker. And over the next 10 years, we built this wine cellar because nobody was doing anything like that. And growing up on the East Coast in New York, I always had a vision of cellaring wine. And it's not necessarily for everyone. It's different. And if you've never cellared wine before, I encourage and challenge you to experiment. Buy a dozen bottles, put them away, and every 3 or 4 years, pull one out and try it. It will evolve dramatically.
Yeah. Comparatively, you didn't have your restaurant for too long before you had the cellar, but how would you say it changed your restaurant? How would you say it changed the dining experience of going to the Refectory?
Well, back in the early to late, well, I guess late 70s, it was not unusual for a restaurant to have a high percentage of liquor sales and a much lower percentage of wine sales because every restaurant was pushing liquor. And I always believed that wine is a beverage of moderation meant to be paired with food and celebrate life.
Yeah, and Julia Child says that wine is made for food.
So what happened, we became a wine destination restaurant. And I did not own the restaurant during the years of 81 to 91. I bought it in 91. And I remember the owners at the time being concerned because our wine sales were far exceeding our liquor sales.
And there's more profit in liquor.
Apparently, there's more profit percentage-wise, but yeah. I was very happy. Yeah. I was excited. We were doing exactly what I set out to do.
And it's obviously
it enhances the menu.
And in 1991, something important happened for the history of the Refectory.
That's also true. We won the grand award from the Wine Spectator. We were the only restaurant in Ohio to ever win it. At that particular year, only 6 restaurants worldwide were added to the roster of 91 restaurants. It was extraordinary. That we would be in the same breath with restaurants across the world.
Incredibly exceptional, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Rich, you said enhancing the menu. Help us understand, for those of us newbies, what does it do to the food? What does it do to the menu? What does it do to the dining experience?
Oh, I'll answer part of that. But, you know, we all experience or have experience, and hopefully we all have various wine tastings where the food becomes richer because you're drinking a certain wine with it. The same goes for the wine, which opens up a different flavor as you're having your foie gras. They complement each other so well. Mm-hmm. And without the wine, without the food, still good, but you know it's not quite the experience. The food without the wine, that doesn't work.
But together, you know, last night we had a leg of lamb with a lovely Bordeaux, and it really made the meal. The two are bigger than the sum of their parts. I think that's sort of the whole idea of pairing wine and food together. Sauterne and foie gras.
How would you answer that question?
Absolutely. There's a synergy between food and wine. And as he said, they're wonderful apart, but together there's a relationship there that really enhances one another. And what most people will think is that the food will be different with the wine. And there's some truth to that, but ultimately the food will make the wine show differently.
Correct.
That's fascinating because I think most of us think of it, or maybe just me, thinks of it as a one-directional thing where the wine makes the food taste better. But I never really thought that the food could actually enhance the taste of the wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll just make the wine show much differently. Yeah. Now, there is a correct sequence to discovering this journey on your own.
Okay.
And that is whenever you want to sort of explore a food and wine pairing together, always taste the wine first with a clear palate. Take a sip of water, a piece of bread, so you have a clear palate. Taste the wine first, and then you'll be experiencing it as the winemaker intended for you to enjoy it. Then you taste the food, whatever food you think will match with that particular wine. And after you taste the food, you go back to the wine, and the wine will just simply be different.
I see. So wine, food, wine.
Exactly.
With the and then clear palate.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So let's go through some fundamentals. Mm-hmm. What do we need to be thinking about when we're choosing wines to go with our foods?
Well, there's lots of schools of thought. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's your palate. There are some principles that work well, but there's really no right or wrong. I mean, some people...
You can have red with fish.
Exactly.
And with chicken.
Exactly. Some people have this idea that, you know, I only have to do it this way. And it's not meant to rule your life. It's meant to experiment. And so, generally speaking, I look for wines that have similar weight, if you will, similar acidity. Like, in other words, if you have a rich dish, you want a wine that has... you know, a rich wine that will sort of complement that dish. If you have something spicy or what we think of would not necessarily be a wine that has a lot of tannin, it would be something that has a little bit of sweetness. So it's kind of balancing the spiciness. And then I generally, you know, think in terms of just the location also. For example, if you're doing Spanish foods, wines from Spain, imagine that. Pair wonderfully with Spanish food.
Do we know why that is? Is it because of...
terroir, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it because of the ground, the grapes that are actually grown there, or is it just the way that these things were developed in tandem?
I think it's how they both evolved together.
That's even better, yeah.
Exactly.
What makes a rich wine? How does, when you say a rich wine, when we go red with usually beef, steak, that sort of thing, when we go whites with chicken and fish, you know, where are those parallels, I suppose?
Well, generally speaking, wines will extract their richness from the skin contact, generally speaking. So the longer the skin contact, the more richness of flavor, the more tannins. Generally speaking, a wine that has a lot more skin contact is going to be treated differently in terms of its aging process. It may be barrel fermented. It may be aged in the barrel for a longer period of time. So you just have a lot more levels of flavor that they're extracting.
Examples?
Well,
big grapes?
You know, I'm thinking like Chardonnays, Cabernets, you know, those types of wines, Pinot Noirs, you know, the major grapes, if you will. But also it depends on where they're from and what the winemaker is trying to accomplish. So if your goal is to make as much wine and as cheaply as possible, you don't really care where the grapes come from and you don't care how much skin contact. You want to get them in the bottle as quickly as possible if that's your goal. On the other hand, if your goal is to make richer wines, then you care about where the grapes come from. You care about what's taking place in the vineyard. You care about what's taking place in the winery. So at each step of the way, there's a process that's much more fastidious, much more selective, and you're paying more for that wine. But you can also have a rich wine that's not necessarily expensive. And again, it's just in the winemaking technique and what's taking place in the vineyard.
What made you expand to having a wine shop as well as your cellar that complemented your restaurant?
Well, first of all, we have an incredible amount of knowledge in-house with respect to wine. A number of our servers have been in the wine business, wholesale, retail. They've been in wine shops.
And they've been with you for a
They've been with us forever. Yeah, I mean, we have servers that have been with us for 15, 20, 25 years. And lastly, we have on
good
board
management.
Yeah, well, thank you. They've been able to put up with me for that long.
There you go.
And lastly, we have Chris Dillman, who is our resident sommelier. We've never had a full-time sommelier before. He's getting ready to sit in on the fourth level of the Master Sommelier exam. Less than 300 people in the world have this designation.
Oh, my goodness.
And what I love about Chris is the fact that he takes a complicated subject that can be daunting and simplifies it and makes it very accessible to everyone.
So even a wine newbie like me could come in and
absolutely.
Leave with something I really enjoy.
Absolutely.
Because he can start to understand that.
Absolutely. So what we found over time is that we have a lot of wine events, and the guests would come in and purchase wines at these wine events. So our thinking was, as we began to do this process over the years, that there's sort of a void for having a lot of wine knowledge when you go to a retail store, because a lot of guests would simply ask us all the time, when I go to a retail store, I don't know what to get. So we thought, well, we'd leverage our knowledge of wine to help people find wines that they enjoy. Because it's not really what I like. It's me trying to understand what you're looking for and what you like.
And it's educating people about wine, which I think will in the long term help. That's what the cool thing is. There are probably four or five people at the refectory who are super knowledgeable about wines and can help you choose what you want. And now if you like something, you can pick up a couple of bottles on your way out. Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Where is the wine? Or is that, should I not ask
where
that?
Where is the wine?
The wine is in the lobby now, and
Where will the wine be?
Wine shop is in the lobby, and we've got several hundred bottles of wine and some racks that we got from the Andersons when they closed, and those racks have some local history. They were actually built by one of the people that worked in the garden center there. Huh. And so that's where we're starting it. Hopefully, in the next year or two, we're adding onto the building and having it integrated into the entrance of the restaurant. So it'll be a much different look at that point.
But Rich and I were going to take over the cloakroom
for tips.
It's been put up before. Yeah.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend. It's Chefs in the City. I'm here with my co-hosts, Rich Tarapak and Steve Stover. Also with us is Kamal Boulos. And we will be right back. We're talking about wine this hour. Stay with us. It's WOSU's All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Chefs in the City on All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Claire Roth, in for Ann Fisher. We are talking about wine today, how to taste it, how to pair it, and the best places to find it, grown and sold in Ohio. Still with me are co-hosts Steve Stover and Rich Tarapak Sr., and our guest today, Kamal Boulos, owner of the Refectory, which just recently opened a wine shop. Do you have a favorite Ohio wine, a discovery you made at a wine shop or a restaurant in town? Where's the best place to taste wine here in Columbus? Join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. We want you to join us in this conversation. So help us understand, at your restaurant, is there a way for us to start to learn about wine beyond just talking about sommeliers? Do you have wine tastings, for instance, anything like that?
Absolutely. We have a lot of wine tastings on the one end of the spectrum. Our Saturday samplings, you can drop by without a reservation from 12 to 3. And for $10 to $12, you can sample five or six wines you can buy retail. And also, the law in Ohio changed, so now you can get a 10% discount for 6 bottles or more.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
That doesn't hurt.
Yeah, we do those every week of the year except 1 week a year. One Saturday a year, we don't do them. It's in the fall, about noon, the whole city comes to a standstill.
Football.
Michigan.
Michigan game. Okay. Well, if anything's going to stop.
Right at the same time.
If anything's going to keep
people
from wine.
They don't have any Michigan wines in the shop at all.
That's why we're talking about Ohio wines. We've got state pride here.
And then in addition to that, we also do 10 wines for $10 and 10 wines for $15, a couple different price points. We also do sit-down winemaker dinners where we have somebody come in and we pair foods and wines together. So we have a wide spectrum of events in terms of wine tastings.
And they can find those on the website.
On our website. Yeah.
And you can find me at many of the places. 10 for 10 tastings because they're a lot of fun. And then we'll stay for the bistro dinner after that. You can also, after the tasting, if you wish, get any bottle that's in the tasting for state minimum retail. And then you can have the bistro dinner in the lounge for $29.95, and it makes quite a nice evening. And you also have retail wine night on Wednesdays?
We did for a period of time.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you've never been to a tasting, how should you approach it? What should you be thinking about as you go in? What should you know?
Well, you'll get some instruction from the persons that are giving the directing the wine tastings, and generally, you know, you start with the whites, the less complex. And again, as Kamal said, you know, you're going to be taking a taste, then you're going to be having a cracker or some bread or a glass of water. You don't have to drink all of the sample, which if you're tasting 10 wines, you may not want to do that. Otherwise, you won't be awake for dinner for $29.95. And then just, you know, they'll talk about, hopefully, the person directing the wine tasting will talk a lot about the vineyards, the terroir, the, you know, how
which
they grow.
Which means the ground. That's French for ground. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, the wherever, you know, if they're French, Patrick Allen, for instance, has a great knowledge and has been at the shop a couple times of French wines. And he and his wife travel and do a lot of tasting. And they talk about that, which is real interesting about what's going on in the neighborhood, who owns the winery, all of those kinds of things. So it's a taste and learn kind of situation.
It's a great opportunity to, you know, lots and lots of people say, well, I'm interested in wine. How do I learn? Well, that's one of the best ways to learn because you can taste 10 or 12 different wines, get a little feeling for what you like, maybe buy some, hone down your own palate to what do you like. We like Rhones, generally Cote de Rhone, Rhones from the south France along the Rhone River. And
so does that describe a region
years,
then?
It's a region.
Okay.
And not in most of the world, wines are described by where they're made, not
like
the
Bordeaux.
Grapes. In the United States, it's the grape. It's a Chardonnay or a Merlot.
Ah,
or whatever,
I see. So. That's an interesting distinction.
But, you know, and I say sometimes just buy a case. Once you get an idea, maybe buy all 12 different bottles of different, and then over time taste them, and then eventually you'll hone in on what you like. Unfortunately, I like almost everything.
Well, we have a caller who wants to tell us about his favorite wines. This is Bill from Columbus. Hey, Bill, you're on the air. I believe you're...
Thank you.
There you are. Tell us about your favorite wines.
My wife and I have been visiting mostly Ohio wineries since about 1991. And we discovered one in Conneaut, Ohio, called Marco Vineyard,
yes.
M-A-R-K-K-O. Arnie Esterer was one of the first people in our region to start doing the French grapes in our region. And he makes some killer stuff. Another winery that we like an awful lot is St. Joseph's Vineyard.
Was there 2 weeks ago. Great stuff. Great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, Art is very good. And actually, he helped. He was at least partially trained by Arnie Esterer of Marco.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
Good Pinots, Cab Francs. Good stuff.
His Chardonnay. Yeah, I love his Pinots. Maybe I shouldn't mention it, but I believe Arnie Esterer of Marco as a graduate of that university up north.
Oh, my gosh. We were good till then.
But hey, I let him get away with it.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for your call, Bill. Rich, you just went on a tour of Ohio wineries.
Yeah, and my son and his son Brad and his girlfriend Kathleen talked us into a 23-hour trip to the two most northeast counties in Ohio, and it's called the Vines and Wine Trail. There are six different trails in Ohio, believe it or not. We went to several of those. These are probably the—
Six different wineries?
Yeah, several different wineries, and these are probably the oldest and best-developed wineries in Ohio. Base of operations for us was Geneva on the Lake. There's a great lodge there. You could stay there. We visited Debonair, Harpersfield. We went to Ferrante, a great winery, for dinner. Great restaurant as well. Went to Laurentia and St. Joseph. We picked up a couple more. One on the way Chagrin Falls, called Sapphire Creek, a beautiful facility, which is evidence of the amount of money being put into these wineries.
So
there are now 260 wineries in Ohio. It has doubled over the last 5 years. Ohio is the sixth largest wine producer in the country. Now, when you think there's California, Oregon, Washington, Virginia, New York, than us.
And then it's us.
Unbelievable.
It's incredible.
And that's just exploded in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and you know, it's within driving distance. You can get there in 2 hours and have a great time. As a matter of fact, let me plug one thing. There's a Pinot Quest that's going to be going on during June. And for $30, you get two tastings at each of 14 different wineries in this area I was talking about.
Hope you have a driver.
You don't have to do it at once. It's for the month.
Oh,
so you can make a couple trips up there and stop at the lodge at Geneva on the Lake and take a rest. It's just incredible how much the various departments of development in Ohio say that the economic impact of these wineries is $1.3 billion. They employ 8,000 full-time employees, and they attract $1.4 million worth of tourist business. And so, it's matured, is I guess the bottom line, and it's worth a try. I'd be interested if Chris has anything to say about what's best.
They've definitely gotten better over the years. In fact, when we first won the Grand Award from the Wine Spectator, I thought, what could I bring out there that people wouldn't ordinarily have seen before? So I actually brought bottles of Marco Vineyard, and I gave them to Robert Mondavi and Marvin Shanken from the Wine Spectator, all these luminaries in our world, and just to thank them for their support and the Grand Award that we received. And they'd never seen these wines before, so it was just me sort of taking a little bit of Ohio with us. And then I'll tell you a quick story about some Ohio wines. We had a Busch Harris Vineyards that put together a blend exclusively for the refectory. So we actually tasted several barrel samples, and then they put together this exclusive blend.
Mount
for the refectory.
Victory? Is that the one in Mount Victory?
Yeah, some years ago. So we had this R3, and I think it was probably 10 years ago or so that we did this for a few years. So I had a few bottles left, and I aged them for a long time because I like wines that have a little bit of bottle age to them. Uh-huh. So I was going to this wine tasting, and I belong to this group of people that taste wine together every now and then, the SWAT team, so to speak. Anyway.
Can we sign up?
So I brought this bottle of wine, and I wrapped it with tin foil, and I said, before you taste all the other wines, I want you to taste this one. And I poured it. So it was tasted blind. They had no idea what it was. And everyone around the table thought, oh, this is a Bordeaux. This is, Heights Vineyards, Bella Oaks, 1990, whatever it was. I mean, they were just astounded when I told them it was an Ohio wine.
Are they still making wine?
Yeah.
Because I would love to. Yeah, I really like that when you had it as a House wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've mentioned how important dirt is to the eventual wine that comes about. So how is Ohio dirt? I'm assuming these grapes are being grown in state for these wineries.
Yeah. And I don't know, the soil content. It's not total clay as it is in central Ohio.
Yeah.
That's the reason you don't see a lot of vineyards in our neighborhood.
But it's not the limestone, the big rocks that you would find in the South or in France and in California.
They're, interesting.
Yeah, when you're for instance, if you're doing some of the Côte d'Aronne's in France, you'll drive up to the vineyard and they're just piles of rocks.
And
the rocks are there because they maintain the heat,
okay,
essentially, and help the wine.
And stress the wine.
So do we have anything particularly that Ohio does, you know, very well, a certain type of grape, a certain type of wine that you would point to?
Early on, we were thought of a white wine. I suppose we, along with some places in upstate New York, are the only ones that do ice wine, which is a great kind of almost dessert wine.
Describe ice wine for us.
Ice wine is wine made from grapes that have just frozen. white grapes, and it's unique to the Niagara area and to this corner of Ohio. But you know, they're growing everything now. They're growing cabs. They're growing pinots. And some of these are I can't remember exactly the winery that was doing it. Was one of the only wineries outside of Oregon or California that was growing this particular grape. So
I think generally speaking, the climate in the soil in Ohio will not necessarily allow us to make world-class wines, but we will make very good wines.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great. They're reasonably priced, and they're very good. And they shouldn't be ignored.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, if you see a bottle of Laurentia Rosé, buy it.
Laurentia Rosé.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. That time of year.
About that time of year.
It might be tonight.
We talked a moment about how much the winery industry has just really grown in Ohio in the last 5 years. What about wine bars? What about wine on the retail side? Has that been more popular in Central Ohio?
I would say it's sort of exploded. I don't know if you – I remember a couple of wine bars – early on, Rich Rosendale had one called Details, and there were a few. But if you think
of Vino,
Vino's been around for a long time. The ones that come to mind immediately in my hood would be Spaggio Cellars, attached to Spaggio, Vino, which is part of the pizza empire of Peter and Laurie Dannis. I'm blanking.
Filio, sorry.
Twisted Vine on Fifth Avenue in my hood, and down in German Village, Haus Frau Haven. There you will have some of the same things you have at the refectory on a smaller scale, knowledgeable wine sellers with a really nice selection of wines, and it's a fun way to – you can go into Twisted Vine on a weeknight and have a glass of whatever they have open and, again, test your skills. There's a newish place called Tastings, a wine experience on North High.
And that's more self-driven, right?
Yeah.
You almost load a card with money and then you...
Yep. With the they're not called Cuvée, but the right. Wine preservation.
And don't forget Giant Eagle.
Well, no. I think the big box stores are now on Friday nights. You can go into Giant Eagle and they'll have tastings of wine. A couple other ones: Wine on High, Wine Bistro, House Wine up in Worthington, the Wine Guy Gahanna, and let's not forget the Barrel and Bottle at the North Market, where you can actually have a sip while you're shopping. The other thing is we have a list that we just I hope it'll be up.
That'll be on our website.
That'll be on the website.
Yeah, you can find that at
And you can actually reply. Can you email allsides@wsu.org and say you missed something, Steve? Because I'd like to fill out the list, but it'll be up there. There's even a new one.
We'll send it on to Steve.
Sure. Yeah. And it lists some of the more popular wine tastings, some of the top restaurant wine programs, wine dinners. The refectory has these fabulous wine dinners. Spaggio has them. Nicola's and La Tavola would be four places that you could look for wine tastings. And you got Weiland's, Hills Market, as Rich pointed out, and Whole Foods and Market District. So,
and anytime you come to our restaurant, whether you're sitting at the bar or at a table, you know, we can create a flight for you so you can have two or three 1 ounce taste of several wines and compare them next to one another. So that's always a great opportunity to learn as well.
That's what you do on Saturdays. That's what I really like about that.
You can do that anytime at our restaurant.
Yeah, if the breweries are doing it, so can the restaurants.
Oh, I forgot to mention, May 9th, 11th to 19th is Columbus Craft Beer Week, and they have a special event called 6-1 Pour on May 12th at Huntington Park. I meant to throw that in.
Oh, there you go. Well, is the beer industry has been blooming as well? Is it hurting the wine industry at all, and retail-wise in Central Ohio?
I think it enhances it, actually. I think it's – and the distilleries are doing well, Watershed and
Middle West.
Central Ohioans like their booze. Yeah.
With restaurants in them. And we have distilleries with restaurants in them. We have craft breweries with restaurants in them. And a few.
And very soon, we'll have a hotel with beer in the room.
And we, I think, are going to speak about that in our next segment. I'm really excited to talk about BrewDog and its continued prominence.
Back to wine.
Yeah. So if you are a little bit too intimidated to go talk to a sommelier, what should you do? Go to someplace like tastings? Where should you start? Is there a good starter wine for those of us who have never ventured into that whole world?
I would go to the tastings. And we go to the – even though we have a lot of wine, we still like to go to the 10-for-10 type wine tastings at the Refectory, and other people may have similar kinds of things where you can taste a number of things on a wide range from a very light white. Sometimes they have bubbly, which I like. We've started to buy a couple bottles of – they have some very modestly priced
Prosecco
or Cava is my favorite, and
Spanish,
even some not too champagne. Expensive French champagnes.
Yeah, this Saturday is wine tasting. The Saturday samplings from 12 to 3 is all sparkling wine.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's a good way to start. Yeah. Because if you're not a wine drinker, you generally start with the lighter wines. Mm-hmm. You'll find people drinking white wines first.
That's a good thing to know.
Yeah. But I would also say the best way to learn about wines is to, first of all, not be intimidated by approaching a sommelier, and don't be afraid to ask questions. Any questions.
Yeah, there are no dumb questions.
They love to talk about wines.
Yeah, I mean, they love
Chris, too.
You know, one of the things they love to do most is just educate people on any level.
Yeah. We have a call coming, and this is Iris in North Linden. Hi, Iris, you are on the line.
Hi. When you were mentioning places to go and taste test wine, a store that I have used for 10 years is Weiland's on Indianola Avenue.
Absolutely.
I have never gone wrong with anything they have recommended to me. And right now in my refrigerator, chilling for this weekend, is a bottle of Dibon, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Dibon.
Debonay. Thank you. Debonay Cava, the Brut Reserve.
Brut. You got it?
And now that you're going to talk about sparkling wines, there you go. That's an excellent starting point for
me. Well, thank you so much.
And buy some cheese while you're there, too.
Yeah. It'll be great weather for a little
great cheese guy
al fresco glass of wine. Oh, one other thing. There are a couple local wineries that also have wine and food, and that would include Camelot Cellars and Wyandotte. We've had friends who own those. There was just an article in Columbus Alive, this week's Columbus Alive, about a local wine maker, tester, and which small plates.
And generally, for instance, at least the Wyandotte used to, they can import grapes. Mm-hmm. They can actually get California grapes or Oregon grapes to make their wine. So even though you don't see a vineyard in their backyard, they're using good quality product.
We are talking about wine today on All Sides Weekend. It is Chefs in the City. Steve Stover and Rich Tarapak Sr. are my co-hosts this hour, and Kamal Boulos is our guest. We will be back in just a moment to talk about restaurant news in Central Ohio. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. It's Chefs in the City today. I'm your host, Claire Roth, in for Ann Fisher. My co-hosts are WOSU food critics, bloggers, and cooking teachers, Steve Stover and Rich Terapak Sr. Check out their blogs at the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Still with us as well is Kamal Boulos, owner of The Refectory. And we are turning our sights now to the restaurant scene in Central Ohio. What are you guys excited
about?
There's
lots going on and a number of things popping up just recently. I guess we always like to talk about things that we've done very recently. One of them is the first of the food halls, and that's the Short North Food Hall at 1112 North High Street. They have six different vendors there, a couple of Asian, a great pizza, and some Mexican, and it was all pretty good.
Two Asians,
yeah.
And both by the owner of Fukuyuru Ramen,
that
right?
One is right. The Short North Food Hall's
Mr. Lee.
Chris Corso, mm-hmm. who has Forno and a couple of other places, mostly in the Short North.
He has a great meatball sandwich and a really good slice
sandwich.
Of pizza, big for $4.20. Mm.
So there's an Italian, there's a Mexican,
get
there's
the churros.
A barbecue. I'm Legacy Smokehouse, which used to be down on, a food truck down on Greenlawn Avenue, and then two from Fukuyuru's owner, Jeff Sal. And there's a sushi one and a little sort of
Lee.
Japanese.
Didn't you?
Is it not ramen?
Ramen. There's ramen.
Yeah, ramen and sushi.
We had the Japanese fried chicken.
That sounds delicious.
Other breaking news, Lupo has opened the exciting new restaurant on the Mallway in Upper Arlington. It's a sibling of La Tavola, Rick Lopez's top 10
in Grandview,
Italian on across from the library in Grandview. This is a new take. Lupo means wolf, but it's a new take on Mediterranean, mostly Spanish tapas. There are a lot of small plates, mostly from $3, $4, $5 to maybe $13. We only usually had about two each. And some wine, and it was lovely, and it's a lively place. It's a lot of fun, and I think it's going to be a top 10 place. So you can look at the review. The review is up right this second. I talked to Nick on the way in. We should be the first with a review on www.wosu.org/chefsinthecity. And we also have that historic Columbus restaurant list. But we have some – Rich and I have some fun news.
We're going to be speaking at the Metropolitan Club and pouring all of this information out once again on May 30th, mm-hmm. Wednesday at the Boathouse. There's plenty of parking. You get a good lunch. I don't know if they're serving any wine, though. We probably should.
We should have wine.
We should have wine.
But it's on the Columbus Metro. It's ColumbusMetroClub.org.
Is
the thing. Yeah. And you don't have to be a member of the club. You can get on the website and make a reservation and join us. It'll be a lot of fun.
Coming up next week, Taste of Dine Originals.
Yeah.
Our annual food fest and wine fest this year.
Franklin Park Conservatory.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's on the 10th from 6 to 9, and you can get information from Dine Originals, but the website, you get the tickets. I must not have put it on here.
DineOriginalsColumbus.com, or you can go to the website of Buckeye Ranch as well.
There you go. Yeah.
It's like $100.
And so what happens there? Is it different restaurateurs?
Yeah, there are 40 different vendors, I guess, both restaurateurs and wineries and wine distributors. Mm-hmm. Pastry makers and ice cream
really
people,
fun.
And it's a lot of fun.
We go every year, and it's just a lot of fun. You can.
I'm glad they've gone back.
You were a sort of a founding member of Dine Originals.
Indeed, yeah. We're really very excited to just highlight local restaurants, it's a very diverse group. Everything from Katzinger's Delicatessen up to the Refectory.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Maybe, Rich, you want to talk about BrewDog was in the national news.
Yeah, BrewDog.
When is it not in the national news? That's my question.
Lord.
Well,
Columbus
I think,
has been all over the news.
And I think I think people are somewhat surprised that we've got this Scottish company coming in to make beer in Ohio.
Yeah, and headquartering its United States operations from here.
And it's terrific. And they're opening their hotel, which I think is about a 30-room hotel that overlooks the brewery. And they'll have
And is that beer in taps. Lancaster? Or?
No, it's in Canal Winchester. Canal Winchester, it's a beautiful facility. If you're going on Friday or Saturday, get there early. They hold about probably 120 people, and sometimes there's a 2-hour wait.
But they do have a big outdoor patio area.
Which just opened up again.
But the hotel is going to be unique in the world because...
Beer taps.
Taps in the rooms.
In the rooms.
In every room?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a replacement for the mini bars.
Exactly.
It's a 26-room hotel, so check out the website. It's got a little more information on it.
I'm sure you can get a reservation if you get there quickly.
Yeah. Thurn's, which is a Columbus treasure. They've been in business for 130 years. It's the same family. Albert Thurn and his brother Anton are still there. They make absolutely the most wonderful smoked meats, maybe the best breakfast sausage on the planet, Braunschweiger, all these custom-made meats. And the reason I'm bringing it up today is that the exit at Greenlawn and 315 South is closing.
And it's closing for good.
For good. Yeah. So I want everybody to continue to go and support Thurn's. You can go there you can come from the east across Greenlawn from High Street or Front Street from German Village. You can also come from Mound Street if you go by the former baseball stadium and get on Harmon Road. It'll take you to Greenlawn. But it's such a Columbus treasure. We want to encourage all of our listeners.
Hey, what are their hours, Steve?
They're open Thursday, Friday, and Saturday morning.
What's so special about it? Why do you think it's such a treasure?
They're unique.
It's artisan.
Artisan meats. You have smoked trout, smoked salmon, smoked chicken, and wonderful lunch meats that they make, and Braunschweiger, and pate,
We took a
sausage.
Guy by the name of Michael Ruhlman, who is a famous cookbook author and a former Cleveland resident, and he was in town, and we took him to Thurn's to view their equipment, which is stuff that's probably been around since the turn of the last century. And he thought it was phenomenal, and he has written a book about sausage and those kinds of things. So if it's good for Michael, it's good for all of us.
The venerable Spaggio, which has been in business almost as long as a refectory.
Which is saying something.
And a labor of love for Chef Hubert and his wife, Helga, is no longer open for lunch. And we take our little Romeo group from time to time around town, and it's Hubert, I talked to Hubert. He says he wants to spend a little more time developing recipes and working with local sources and things like that, but no more lunch and no more brunch at the Spaggio, which will be greatly missed. But go and support them as well.
And if you want to have a good lunch, Steve and Jim Boudreaux and I just recently tasted some food by the new chef at Rock Mill.
I was going to ask. I'm going there this weekend, so you got to tell me what to eat.
It's phenomenal. They've got a foie gras that has coconut ash in it. They've got red carrots that have been sous vide. There's a pretty special stuff. The hamburger is also wonderful.
The hamburger and the fried chicken sandwich with hot honey are the two signature dishes.
So Matt
but
Barbie,
we also had a really interesting citrus with almond butter kind of a dish.
And it was a salad.
Matt Barbie is the owner of Rock Mill. They're also doing, this is important, Rock Mill Brewery down near Lancaster is doing, as soon as the season arrives, they're having Pauly G's pizza truck come in
on
Friday nights and barbecue on Saturday nights, and you can taste their wonderful Belgian beers.
And there'll be music from time to time. It'll be kind of a happening.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's a beautiful property, too.
One more important, pertinent thing. Today is the grand opening of Johnson's Fine Ice Cream in New Albany. There's a ribbon cutting, I think, right now.
It was born in Bexley, but it's now moved elsewhere as well. And it has some of the best ice cream around. It actually, I think, has a higher butterfat content than just about any other ice cream.
Really? Well, that's a recommendation if I ever heard one.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes it so smooth. You got to have the fat to taste the flavor.
And what would a show be like without Cameron Mitchell information? I got a couple things.
Fill us in.
The Avenue, it appears, the Avenue Steak Tavern is open in Dublin. And the new deli concept, Harvey and Ed's, which is based on Russ and Daughters in New York City, in the old, rest in peace,
Rigsby's
location. It should open this month late. I haven't talked to Brian lately, but I think those are important. And the other thing that we're going to talk about next month is rooftop bars.
Yeah.
Well, the weather's finally getting nice.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We went to Juniper. Short North Food Hall is going to have one.
Sun just opened a big patio. Right. I'm not sure if they have food, although they usually have a food truck
or
two.
They have food trucks.
That's what they do. Yeah.
Which is a good idea.
So
no,
we're going to have a lot of info on rooftop bars and outdoor dining next month.
The old Crest on Indianola.
I was just there.
Yeah.
I was just there two nights ago.
The Alsha Hall Brothers.
Well, you're getting out a little bit.
She was doing research.
Well, you were doing research.
Crest
and Rock Mill would be two good choices.
Yeah.
Oh, you had something else. Come on. You were going to talk about the music series at the Refectory.
Oh, yeah. If you've never been, it's just one of the most exciting things that we've done in many, many years. We started doing these 6 years ago. We did six shows the first year. It's a four-course dinner and a show from 6 to 9. We bring national artists, Byron Stripling, Bobby Floyd, to name a couple.
Wow.
And then, touring national and international artists, and now we do over 100 shows a year.
Well, but you have themed ones
really?
Sometimes
yeah.
too,
wow.
right?
It's a theater as well.
Yeah. 100 a year.
100 a
That's
year.
That's like 8 a month.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, they're all. It's a wide range. There's some classical.
Absolutely.
There was even opera once.
Opera.
We were there for one of the jazz nights.
Right. Yeah.
And it turned out to be some of the guys from Phil Dirt and the Dozers moonlighting yeah. playing jazz.
Yeah, we do jazz, bluegrass, opera Columbus, the Columbus Symphony.
I saw one themed to the Titanic, I believe.
That's right.
Not too long ago.
Theme events. We've got
one. That'd be perfect for you and me, Rich.
We've got coming up one with Disney music.
Oh, fun. Well, that's so fun.
We have a children's menu, so families bring their kids. And the servers actually dress up in Disney costumes.
So it's cheaper than the bread boat.
Yeah. As we wrap up, would you each like to tell me one of the best wine food pairings you've had in the last month or so?
Yeah. Last night we had a grilled leg of lamb with ratatouille and a bottle of Bordeaux.
Okay.
And I did a shrimp and grits with a very big red. And it was
spicy.
Yep, big spicy red. It was terrific.
Kamal?
And I did a Chardonnay that Chris Dillman brought me to taste the other day with a little bit of seafood Quilibiac, which was amazing.
Those all sound very good.
What about
very
you?
Hungry now. Oh, I am just learning about wine in this show so that I can go forward.
Right.
Yeah, I waited to get all my intel here.
Yeah.
Any last notes before we wrap up for the hour?
Well, next month we're going to talk about outdoor dining and picnics and other fun things.
We've got things like Picnic with the Pops coming up, so we can talk a little bit about that. And
enjoying food al fresco.
Yeah,
indeed.
Exactly.
Well, thank you all so much for joining me today. I am so happy to have as my co-host this hour, Rich Terapak Sr. and Steve Stover, both WOSU food critics. You can read more of their work, learn all about what is going on in the Columbus food scene by going to WOSU.org/chefsinthecity. If you go to our webpage, WOSU.org/allsides, you can read a very full list of places to drink wine around Columbus. And our guest this hour, thank you so much, Kamal Boulos, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Kamal is the owner of the Refectory. They've had a wine cellar since 81?
Yep.
And 81. Now they have a wine shop in store. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Claire Roth. Our All Sides is produced by Kyle McKinnon. The All Sides interns are Michael Lee, Alex Havlicek, and Martin Coleman. Video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow the show on Twitter. We're at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me on Twitter as well at Claire Alice Roth. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, thank you to him, as well as Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. This has been All Sides in the City, or All Sides Chefs in the City. Thank you guys again, Rich and Steve. Appreciate it.